Since Hurricane Katrina hit New Orleans, the population of Baton Rouge has doubled. The evacuation of the Gulf Coast sent people streaming into the Louisiana capital. Their arrival has allowed the city to show off its southern hospitality, offering housing, food, clothing, jobs, and comfort. But as our colleague Michelle Norris discovered, a city can't grow that much this fast without complications.
Though separated by just 80 miles, New Orleans and Baton Rouge have very different personalities. Baton Rouge, the younger sister, long overshadowed by that strumpet of a city to the south. It is, or at least was, a quiet town, buttressed by the twin pillars of state government and academia. Now it's a city in transition, and everywhere, evidence of growing pains. Nathan Whitesides is the area manager at the mattress firm store at the Cortana Mall, and he could barely keep inventory in stock.
The back wall of the warehouse is our twin wall, and you can see that the majority of that wall is empty right now. They come in and they go out as fast as we can get them in. All twins, all feels, all comforts, all price ranges.
With twice as many residents, there are twice as many mouths to feed, more demand for things like diapers and baby formula, and a run on all manner of housing supplies as newly homeless families try to reestablish their lives. Some adjustments are simply easier than others. The stores can order more goods, the roads can be expanded, eventually new homes and apartments can be built. But attitudes and stereotypes can be less elastic, especially when race and class come into play. Baton Rouge has inherited the rich, the poor, the lawless, and the law-abiding, all kinds of people now in need of help. Many have been absorbed into friends' and families' homes, but thousands are housed in shelters throughout the city. The largest of those is the River Center, the temporary home for 4,000 evacuees. Two blocks up the hill sits the Frost Top Diner with its giant mug of root beer in the parking lot. It's a popular spot for New Orleans evacuees looking for a taste of home. Well, sort of.
Everything's bigger in New Orleans. It must be because I've had lots of po' boys thrown back at me because they were too small.
Manager Katie McKenzie also has this to say about Katrina's wave of evacuees.
They probably saved Bostock. Usually it's $1,500 a day. If lucky, it's probably going to $8,000 a day. At least six. It's insane.
Even so, Katie McKenzie expressed mixed feelings about the new arrivals, echoing concerns we heard elsewhere in the city.
Crime in New Orleans is higher than Baton Rouge. So when you take the crime, which comes from people, out of New Orleans and you put it somewhere else, pretty much science. And I live downtown, and I won't sleep there alone.
You're afraid?
Oh, yeah. If you're not in that shelter by 7, you basically walk the streets.
You're less than 2 blocks away from the River Center, so a lot of the people who are housed now in the River Center make their way here to get something to eat. What have you seen here at the Frost Top?
A lot of homeless people. There's so many of them. It's amazing. There's so many of them. And most of the people coming through, they don't want to go back to New Orleans.
What's going to happen to them as they move out of the shelter? Eventually, they can't stay. The evacuees can't stay there forever. Will they be welcome here in Baton Rouge?
No.
I wish we could sort of put that expression on the radio. I mean, you just sort of raised your eyebrows and sort of twisted up your mouth a little bit. What did that mean?
It means I thought about it, and no. We are overpopulated, and most of the people who came to the shelter are homeless. Before. And they have nothing. I mean, yeah, sure, if they want to make room for them and give them a fresh start, that's fine. But we really don't need any more people walking the streets.
Let me play devil's advocate with you. Might this be the sort of shining moment for Baton Rouge to step outside of the shadow of its older sister?
It's very, very possible. But as far as all the people, it's just fact. Most of the people transported here were on the lower income African-American level. I'm not saying, you know, they're worthless and they can't never do nothing, but for them to make a living here, it's going to be difficult. I mean, hell, I'm lower income and I'm Caucasian, so, you know, I'd be in the same place.
Angel Carabello knows it's going to be tough. In New Orleans, he worked as a printer. Now, everything about his future is uncertain. We found him at the Department of Social Services, picking up food stamps under the state's so-called Louisiana Purchase Program. Carabello could barely touch the food stamp card, holding only its edge as if it were toxic. He's averse to handouts, always has been, he says, but explains he had no choice.
I guess for the next couple of months, I have to figure out a way to survive out here. Like, I've been in New Orleans 26 years, 27 maybe, and that's all I know. I mean, it's like a security blanket in New Orleans, you know? You don't feel comfortable unless you're there. I don't feel like I'm at home here. I've overheard people talk about the people from New Orleans, like they're out here committing crimes and whatnot. I'm pretty sure that crime was out here before we got here. So I don't think the people from New Orleans has made that much of an influence on the crime rate.
You know, a lot of people saw the looting on TV, saw the violence at the Superdome at the convention center, and they looked at those pictures and they're now afraid. Is there something perhaps that they don't know about the people who were trapped in the city of New Orleans?
Some of us out there were just trying to survive. So.
What does that mean for you? What were you doing just trying to survive?
I don't want to sound like I was trying to be better than anyone, but I was actually looking for a store. With what little money I did have at that time, I was looking for a store. But with no electricity, there were no stores open. There were people looting Robert's. And after seeing them looting for a while, I guess I finally broke down too and did the same. But I only took the essential things. And that's mainly what a lot of people out there in New Orleans were doing.
Angel Carabello knows that images of looting won't fade away anytime soon, but here's what he wishes people would see when they look at him.
Just another person trying to make it. I mean, that's all I want them to see is a person. That's all.
The massive influx of new evacuees will test the city's tolerance on so many levels. Suddenly, there's more competition for homes, for jobs, for spots in the best schools. How long and how wide will the city open its arms? Before the day's end, we met two longtime Baton Rouge residents who offered their assessment. Robert Whittington is an affordable housing developer. Donald Young, a former welder, now unemployed. Whittington is white, Young is black. Their backgrounds could not have been more different. And yes, both see the challenges the city now faces and the potential for more problems on the horizon, yet they also share a kind of practical optimism. The city, they say, simply must adjust.
Oh, it's going to be great. I think this whole thing will be a blessing long term. I think it's hard to see that right now, but I think everything will be for the better in Baton Rouge. I mean, Baton Rouge is a different city permanently. And I think it'll be a good thing.
I think very accurately you can describe this city now as a gumbo. This is a gumbo, baby. I mean, with all kinds of stuff in it. But, you know, I think over the course of time it's going to be good.
In Baton Rouge, I'm Michelle Norris.